All right, welcome to the free stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton, Super Bowl edition of the show. Really, first of two Super Bowl editions of the show since we have the bye week in between. And I'm just going to say it a couple times, not just for your sake, but to convince myself, but Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the Super Bowl. Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the Super Bowl in Tampa edition of the show this week. So thank you for joining us. And obviously there's a lot to get to today. We got even more next week when we'll be, I'll probably do the show a little earlier next. Maybe I'll do it on Wednesday or even Tuesday next week just to let it breathe leading up to the game. But for this week, I actually wanted to take a couple days. I thought about doing a reaction show on even Sunday night or Monday, given what happened and given the gravity of the situation. But honestly, I thought it would just be jibber-jabber. It would be, I wasn't ready. You know, we all had to kind of let that thing just be for a few days, or at least I did. So here we are now. It's Thursday of Super Bowl week. It's become more clear. It's become real. Thursday of the week before the Super Bowl, I should say. And, you know, looking at where this team was, I had so many thoughts over the weekend leading up to the game, and then as the game progressed and it got to be 28-10, I mean, that was the first time I let myself really think. You know, you never want to, like, get too far ahead of yourself, and then you think something, or even, heaven forbid, you say something out loud. And I don't believe in jinxes, but you do that, and then all of a sudden it swings the other way, and you feel terrible. But when it was 28-10, when they got that fourth touchdown, that's when I was like, I didn't say it out loud, but I said, I think they're going to win this game. It'd be hard to not win this game at this point. And any other game that wasn't the NFC Championship game, you'd be like, oh, yeah, they're going to win the game. You know, you wouldn't even think twice about it. But given the gravity, given the stakes, given the underdog status, all those things, okay, you know, it's 28-10 over here. You know, and even before that, the Scotty Miller touchdown before the half, which is still, I mean, so many astounding things happen that, you know, once it became readily apparent, I didn't just think back to a year ago, although I did think back to a year ago. Remember the final game of the season a year ago? Remember Jameis Winston throwing a pick six to end the game and end the season in the loss to the Falcons to put the Bucs at 7-9? It was one of many, many pick sixes. And if you think back to that moment, and it's kind of funny because usually when you think of your low point of the season, it's usually some point in the season in the middle somewhere. But that was both the final play of the season and the low point of the season. And when that happened, if you had told me at that point, hey, 1 year from now, or a little more than a year from now, because it was in December around New Year's, the Bucs are going to A, have Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski playing for them, B, have their beautiful uniforms that we've all come to know and love back, which at the time we didn't know, and C, be getting ready to play in the Super Bowl in Tampa. But it's before you even get to anything else about COVID, by the way. If you had told me those three things, I mean, your head would explode, right? Like, it would just explode. It's amazing how quickly this organization's fortunes have turned in so many different areas. And it, you know, I always thought it took time. Like, I'm an optimist. If you listen to this show, you know I'm always looking ahead. I'm always looking at the bright side of things. I'm always saying, hey, this can happen. This good thing that you don't think can happen, here's why it maybe can happen. You know, I'm always trying to be that guy. And I definitely thought the Bucs would get better this year. At the time, we didn't know what the quarterback situation would be. I mean, I'm talking about right after that Atlanta game. At the time, we weren't sure if Jameis Winston would be back or not, although, as we know now, it seems like that play, not that it comes down to one play, but that one play almost pretty much sealed his fate. And I kind of wonder what would have happened if that play didn't happen. What if the Bucs had won that game? Jameis played well. They still finish 8-8. They still miss the playoffs. But do the Bucs completely go scorched earth like they did and go after Tom Brady and say bye to him? I mean, I wonder about these things. It's amazing how fine the line is in so many aspects of life, not just sports. But when you look back at both great things that have happened to you or bad things that have happened to you, and how easily those things could have been different if you change one little thing in front of them, kind of like the butterfly effect, I guess, it blows your mind. But anyway, they did go scorched earth. They did go for the complete shove your chips into the middle of the table option. They did get Tom Brady. They did fix the uniforms. They did get Rob Gronkowski. They did have another stellar draft after they had a couple of good ones before that. And, you know, I thought, just like, I mean, you know, it's your own experience. I thought just like it was in the 90s when the Bucks were so bad for so long. Then they broke through in 97 with a playoff berth and won a game. But they couldn't quite, you know, the offense still wasn't there. Then in 99, they got all the way to the NFC Championship game, just came up a little short, had a couple more failures, finally broke through. That's what it felt like it was supposed to happen. We're going to break through. We're going to finally break this playoff drought. Super Bowl's probably ambitious yet, but hey, maybe down the road. Maybe in number two. Year number two for Brady, or maybe even a little past that. Who knows? And as it is, here we are. And so, you know, if you want to go even further back, I think back, this is what I still think about. I think back to 1996, okay? And I think back to when there was talk about the Bucks moving to Baltimore or the Bucks moving to Los Angeles, which was always the thing that came up. And we needed a new stadium and on and on and on. And Malcolm Glazer bought the team and kind of gave them temporary reprieve, because we thought they were going to leave like even like in 94, 95 or something, if I remember correctly. And then Glazer bought the team. Say what you want about the Glazers, but he bought the team. And I was like, okay, well, now we got a chance here. So then we get to this referendum, this half penny sales tax, which to this day, by the way, is highway effing robbery, okay? But the thing about highway robbery, people say, that's highway robbery, I'm not doing that. Think about literal robbery. When if a robber puts a gun to your head and says, give me your wallet, do you say, I'm not doing that, that's a bad deal for me. I'm giving you my wallet for nothing in return? No, he's got a gun to your head. You give him the wallet, and you live another day. That's kind of what happened with the half-penny sales tax. I mean, you can stick by your principles and all that, and I don't blame anybody who does, but you could say, hey, we can give these guys this terrible deal and we can lose everything, but we can pat ourselves on the back because we didn't cave. Or we can just get ourselves a brand new stadium, keep our team, and fast forward all these years later, Bucks have won a Super Bowl, playing in another this week, hosting two Super Bowls in that stadium that the sales tax paid for. And just generally, life to me is better than it would have been if we didn't have the Bucks. What if the Bucks just had left? They could have just left. And there'd be no stadium there. We probably would have raised the sombrero anyway. I don't know what the hell would be there now. Nobody knows. Point is, I think back to that sometimes. It was 53-47 in the voting, by the way. I think back to a little 16-year-old me as a sophomore at Jesuit High School after football practice, standing on the corner of Himes and Loyola Lane in those days leading up to the Tuesday election with my support the halfpenny sales tax sign. And just standing out there after practice, because I had to wait for my mom to come pick me up anyway. I didn't have my driver's license yet. I didn't have a car. So I'd practice at Jesuit with Coach Siao and Coach Wiener, my wideouts coach, and the rest of my teammates. And we'd get ready for our games. And then practice would end. And I'd go have to wait usually an hour or so because my mom worked long hours back then. She'd pick me up sometimes after 6. And I'd stand there with my campaign sign. I'd stand on the corner to minimal traffic passing by on Himes. It's not like I went over to Dale Mabry. I could have walked over there, I guess. Because I was just so desperate for the Bucks not to leave. I didn't care about anything else. And I wasn't a taxpayer at the time. I didn't know the difference. To me, the vote was vote yes on the Bucks staying or vote no if you want them to leave. That was it to me. And you know what? 20-something, 24 years later, it kind of still is that. So yeah, the deal sucked. The Glazers got all the money, even though we paid for everything. They even get USF's money when USF has games there. It's a complete, just awful deal. Would you change any of it right now? I sure as hell wouldn't. I think back to all those things. You know, I think back to the birth of my son on the, you know, across the street from where the Bucks practice, thinking how much fun it was going to be having a son to watch Bucks games with and how excited he is this week now. And how when I was 9 years old, I couldn't even spell the word playoffs, much less have my team playing in the Super Bowl in Tampa. I think back to all that. But, you know, the most fun part about it, and I'll say this over and over the next couple of weeks, it's like I always say, I said it last week, you know, the Bucks, if they beat Green Bay, You didn't go into work Monday and get a promotion in your job. You didn't get a $50,000 bonus or something for the Bucks winning. It doesn't change your life. You know, you still have a life to lead. All of us have different things, whether it's, you know, jobs, spouses, kids, you know, whatever it is. Everybody's got that stuff. And none of it changes, no matter how well a sports team from your town does. But it's about the memories and it's about the relationships. And, you know, I had the TV out on the porch on Sunday and some neighbors came over. I had some friends come over. We socially distanced and all that. Of course, my own wife and kids were here. And that was fun. Then when the game ended, one of the things I remembered about 2002, when the Bucks beat Philadelphia, not even the Super Bowl, my best memories from 2002, honestly, are surrounding the NFC Championship game that year. I think back to when they beat Philadelphia, and we were just in a state of complete, it was not the same this time, because it's never like the first time, when we'd never even seen the Bucks in the Super Bowl. That was still and always will be the most incredible thing ever. And we were just beside ourselves. We were at my uncle's house, and we got to do something. So we just got in the car and drove to the stadium because it wasn't like it was planned. There was no like announcement like, hey, we're going to have a thing at the stadium. I just remember everybody going to the stadium and people roaming the streets on Himes and Tampa Bay and up to MLK. And I remember sitting literally on the roof of the car with the open sunroof as we drove down Himes. And it wasn't very fast because there was a bunch of people and a bunch of cars. And I remember leaning down and high-fiving people. And I remember how much fun that was. And I said Sunday, I said, I wonder if it'll be that way again. And I said, we're going to find out one way or the other. I told my son before the game and my daughter, hey, and they already were rooting for the Bucks, but this made them root extra hard. I said, hey, they win. We're getting in the car. We're driving down to the stadium and we're going to see if there's a party down there. But I wasn't really convinced, you know, the way it's been with COVID and everything. And, you know, I just wasn't sure if it'd be the same. And plus now there's social media, so people kind of communicate that way. And there's not the impromptu organic stuff as much as there used to be. Lo and behold, I'll tell you this, and I mean this, I'm not exaggerating. It was better this time around than it was in 2002. I mean, it was a mob scene on Himes, bumper to bumper. So my neighbor's got a double sunroof minivan, and we said, hey, let's get in her car because she's got, you know, we got to have two sunroofs for this. She's got huge flags too. So we get my family, her and her kid, we all get in there. We drive down to Himes. I'm driving literally with, she wanted me to drive because she wanted to like climb out the sunroof and my wife was out the other sunroof taking pictures. So I'm driving literally standing up so my foot reaches the gas pedal, but my head is still sticking out the sunroof. I think I need to change the fuse on her horn. Like I think her horn doesn't even work anymore because I just leaned on it for about an hour and a half straight. Waving flags, taking pictures. I will post pictures and video on my Twitter account. I haven't done that yet. And it was just, I mean, you know, especially with everything going on, there was the election recently and everything and COVID and all this stuff. And it was one of those few times where it felt like everybody was just pulling on the same rope. Like every single person out there was just happy. Nobody cared. I didn't care about anybody else's background. I didn't care about anybody else's personality. They had Buck stuff on. They were smiling. They were cheering. And I was looking right back at them doing the same thing. And I mean, I even put the car into park right at the corner of Himes and Tampa Bay. That was like ground zero. And the light was green, but it didn't matter because nobody's moving. And I just put the car in park, climbed on top of the roof, and just soaked it all in with like both arms in the air for a few seconds. And I just wonder, I didn't know, you know, in 2002 when we did that, you don't know if that's ever going to happen again. And we don't know if it's ever going to happen again now. So I wanted to just feel it, man. And it was so much fun. And I don't even know what's going to happen on next Sunday, obviously. This is a tall order the Bucks have. But we're always going to have that. My kids will definitely remember that the rest of their lives. And I hope they get to do it again when they're older. You know, I hope we go to many more Super Bowls. But you don't know. It was 18 years since the last one. It might be 18 more. It might be 180 more. I mean, you don't know. Like, this is hard. There's 32 teams. And even in the NFC, there's 16. It's hard to be the best one. And so the Bucks have done that. Now, talking about the actual game in Green Bay, and we talked about all the things they were going to have to do to win that game. And, I mean, I was absolutely blown away by the performance of the defense. Because you've seen these games before, and you turn the ball over three times in a crucial tight game in the second half. I mean, if I tell you that before the game, hey, all I'm going to tell you is that the game will be close in the third quarter, and the Bucks will then have three backbreaking interceptions almost consecutively. I'm not going to tell you anything else about the game. You'd be like, oh my God. Every single time that happened, what did the defense do? The defense made it go away. Offense got, you know, they got the job done when they needed to, and the play before half, the sequence before half with Sean Murphy Bunning's interception, then the subsequent touchdown pass to Scotty Miller. I mean, that it's hard to lose a game when you have that happen. Packers are on their way to get 3 points or seven. We get a pick, and not only do we get 3 points, instead we get seven. That's a 10 to 14 point swing right there, right before halftime. But even after that, the Bucs were on the ropes, or could have been on the ropes, had the defense not done what it did. But they got, I mean, after those picks, the defense would come out and I'd be like, oh man, you know, Rodgers is going to just have this in the end zone in the next four or five plays. Oh my God, this is slipping away. Every single time the defense did it. The pressure. And they didn't do it with a ton of blitzes. They blitzed, I think, around 30%. I think they blitzed a little off of their regular season percentage. But Shaq Barrett, three sacks, had four pressures. Just dusting his guy. Okay, it wasn't anything creative. Same thing with JPP, four pressures, two sacks. Going back to Shaq Barrett, I forgot to mention, he has pressures now. He has at least one quarterback pressure in every single game going back to week two. That's 17 consecutive games, and that is the longest streak of any pass rusher in the NFL by far. 17 straight games. The next most is 11 straight, which Carl Lawson had for Cincinnati. Vita Vea didn't know what he'd be like. You know, he had the broken leg, broken ankle, but he was back, hadn't played in a while, just hoping to maybe have him. I said on the show, can he maybe just take up some space, maybe free up the rushers? He did more than that. He did what he usually does. First of all, he had three pressures of his own, but even if you just spot shadowed him on certain plays and watched him, he was moving guys back. He was doing that thing where he takes one player in each hand. He's got a guy on each arm, and he was pushing both of them a couple times on double teams. He was doing all those things. And now he's got an extra 2 weeks, another week with the bye week, to get healthy and be effective for the Super Bowl. That's big. Sue had a couple pressures. The Bucs got pressure with four, and then they blitzed as well. But, I mean, that was huge. And the other thing they did, and they ain't going to do it against the Chiefs so much, I don't think, but they've done it 2 weeks in a row now. Credit to Todd Bowles. They rolled up their coverage against teams they knew that would be effective. The Bucs, the past two games, Green Bay this past weekend and the Saints game the week before that in the divisional round, have run press coverage at the two highest rates of the entire Todd Bowles era in Tampa Bay. They ran press coverage 44% of the time against the Saints. It was up to 47% of the time against Green Bay. They only even barely cracked 30%, much less 40%, two other times during the whole 2020 season. One was the Rams game, and one was the road game at Atlanta. Again, I do not expect that to continue against the Chiefs, but they knew it would work. We talked about it going back to the Saints game. At the time, I did not believe they would do it, but we saw these numbers about Breeze versus press and non-press, and I was like, man, like they really should roll these guys up more, but they won't because they do what they do. But they didn't. They adjusted, and they did it again against Aaron Rodgers, and he had a tough day. And the Bucs, on top of that, forced turnover. I mean, the Jordan Whitehead forced fumble. Jordan Whitehead, who did not practice today, hopefully he's going to be okay. He's got the extra week, so hopefully that gets him back in there. He was throwing hats. I mean, he came up on that fumble, that forced fumble from the safety spot, and absolutely put a dot right on the football, forced the fumble. Did it again, the play he hurt himself on, actually, and that's kind of the consequences of playing that way. Did it again a couple series later and hurt himself. But he had an enormous impact on the game. Like I said, Sean Murphy Bunting, who was a whipping boy all season long, being the weak link in coverage in the slot position, has picked up his game considerably. I believe he's got the highest DVOA improvement individually of any player on the Bucs defense compared from the regular season to the postseason. So you got to acknowledge him. Leonard Fournette, that touchdown run was amazing. A buddy of mine said that was like where you like use like multiple buttons on the controller if you're playing Madden, had the spin move, had the dive, had the shake and bake, broken tackle. The offensive line only allowed five total pressures all day. Chris Godwin had another drop, and it looked like he might be in his own head a little bit. Next play, they go deep to him, they hit it. Brady wasn't that good. I mean, Brady was not that good, right? You can't throw three interceptions in the second half like that and win. But the Bucs did it. The defense is a big reason. And the Packers did him some favors, too. I mean, the fourth down sequence, when it was fourth and goal from the eight, and this is coaching malpractice. And Matt LaFleur is a hell of a football coach. And he's usually very good with the... I'm not just talking about the X's and O's. He's good with the analytical stuff, and he's good with doing the right things at the right times. But you got third and goal from the eight or the seven, whatever it was. And you tell your quarterback, hey, you call the play. Okay, cool. Fine. But you don't tell your quarterback what your intention is for fourth down. That's a big deal. You can't say you're calling the play without telling them the whole. You can't just give them a little bit. You got to give them the whole thing or give them nothing. If I was a Green Bay fan, I'd be incensed at that. I mean, Rodgers is like, yeah, they let me call the play on third down. They didn't tell me we weren't going on fourth down. That changes drastically what you might call on third down and what you how you might behave on third down. So Rodgers, I mean, he had plenty of room to run. I know he said, obviously I'm not out there, he is. I know he said he didn't think he did. He gets at least 5 yards, so maybe he doesn't score, although I think he definitely could have scored. But he gets at least to a fourth and goal from the three instead of from the eight, which is a huge difference. And LaFleur didn't even tell him, hey, we're kicking. And it turns out the analytics in that situation, which I was surprised because at the time I thought it was just an absolutely atrocious idea. The analytics did favor going for it, but only by a couple percentage points, which is not insignificant, but it's also not as big as I thought. But, I mean, listen, I don't care how many timeouts you got. I don't care about the two-minute warning. When you have the ball inside the 10-yard line and you need a touchdown, you try and get the MF and touchdown, like, period. I mean, to me, that's one of the easiest things. And I know they thought they could get it back, and I know they knew they needed a two-point conversion on top of that, but if you're so comfortable with your timeouts, then you've got the timeouts anyway if you don't get the two-point conversion, and then you only need a field goal. You get a touchdown. And if you miss on fourth and goal, you've got your timeouts to get it back and try anyway. I always say do what the other team doesn't want you to do, right? So when they got that stop on third down and you saw the field goal team trotting out, as a Bucs fan, how did you feel? I was like, no way they're going to kick this, really? Like they're just going to not try to tie the game? I was like, and they still, like if they were down six, you say, okay, now they're only down three, then they need another field goal. They still need a touchdown. It changed nothing. I mean, I was doing somersaults inside when I saw the kick team come out. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe they're kicking this. So that's a pretty good indicator that you probably shouldn't do what you're doing if the other team is really happy you're doing it. I was nervous as hell they were going to go for it on fourth down. I'm thinking, oh man, all right, they got that third down stop. One more Bucs. Can they get it? So it's kind of weird. I mean, it's weird is the word for it. Like I really don't get it, and it doesn't fit in. Like if Pete Carroll does something like that, or Mike McCarthy does something like that, okay, fine. You know, that's not that big of a deal. But LaFleur, I was really surprised to see him do that. I don't want to say stoop to that level, but I almost said I was surprised to see him stoop to that level. You don't do that. I mean, imagine being a Green Bay fan and watching that kick team trot out and feeling like the whole thing just blew up. Bad feelings. So anyway, the Bucs got the job done, okay? They're in the Super Bowl. There is not a lot to be unhappy about. That does not mean there are not things that need to be fixed. We know this Kansas City team, just like I said, hey, Aaron Rodgers ain't Drew Brees. This is going to be tougher. And it was. The Bucs got it done. Well, Patrick Mahomes ain't Aaron Rodgers. In fact, he ain't like anybody else. Now, it's encouraging. To me, it's encouraging. If you look at the Bucs season in 2020, and Football Outsiders did a good piece on this that I will link to on my Twitter feed if you want to follow me at Bobby Game Day. The Bucs' worst four games this season were the Bears' loss on Thursday night, 20-19, the win against the Giants. This is according to DVOA. DVOA is kind of the tell-all, end-all, be-all stat that just basically takes every play, factors in the situation, factors in the opponent. For example, if you gain 5 yards on a play, then that's 5 yards in basic stats. They give you 5-yard gain. Your passing offense gets 5 yards or your running offense gets 5 yards. DVOA knows better. DVOA gives you almost no credit for 5 yards on third and 15, but on third and four, they give you a ton of credit for five. It takes every play, breaks it down. It's a very useful stat. So according to DVOA, and you can read more on it if you Google it, like I said, Bucs-Bears was one of the worst games of the year that the Bucs played. The Giants' win on Monday night was one of the worst. Of course, Week 9 against the Saints, the 38-3 loss was one of the worst. And the number 4 loss, number 4 worst game of the year was the Chiefs' game in November. I will read you what Football Outsiders says about it. Quote, It must be unnerving for Bucs fans to see the Super Bowl opponent Chiefs on the other side of one of Tampa Bay's worst games of 2020, but it also speaks to how consistent the Buccaneers were that they played a dozen games better than a three-point loss to the eventual AFC champions. Regardless, this is remembered as the Tyreek Hill game, where the Kansas City wideout gained 139 yards on three touchdown catches on his way to a 13-catch, 269-yard day. Those two plays put Kansas City up 17-0, and Hill's 20-yard touchdown put them up 27-10 in the third quarter. Mike Evans caught a pair of touchdowns to pull Tampa Bay within 3 points, but the Chiefs took the ensuing kickoff with 4:10 left to play and ran out the rest of the clock. Hill was obviously the big star of the day, but Patrick Mahomes also finished with 462 yards on 49 passes. Due to their early deficit, the Bucs only ran the ball 13 times, still managing 75 yards. So he goes on to say, I won't read a bunch more, but he says, the most obvious takeaway from these four games is that the Bucs at their worst were still usually pretty good. And he goes on to detail some more things. And again, I'll link the article on Twitter. The point is, I remember that game, just like you all do, from November, and it was not as close as the final score indicated. I mean, it was 27-24, but the Bucs were down 27-10, did get it to win within three, and then the Chiefs, like it said, had the ball for the final 4 minutes. But the Chiefs' offense was trying to score on every single possession up until that final one where they were trying to run out the clock. And after the first half, and it was like, if you want to talk about a low point of the 2020 season, what was the low point of the 2020 season? Like, let's pinpoint the exact moment that the Bucs' 2020 season was at its absolute lowest point. Like, if you had a bar or a line graph, I should say, almost looks like an EKG, where would that low dot be, okay? I say that low dot was literally the moment that Tyreek Hill's head was below his heels in the middle of his backflip as he backflipped into our end zone, just clowning our defense to go up whatever it was, 27-10 at the time. That was the low point of the season, right? Like, at that point, the Bucs, and I'm not saying that was that bad of a point because the Bucs were still 7-4 or 7-5, whatever it was. But at that point, it got no worse. And from then on, the Bucs still haven't lost since. They played a really good second half against the Chiefs. They had the bye week and won four in a row and have won three playoff games on the road since then. So the Bucs can play with these guys. I mean, I'm encouraged that the Bucs lost to the Chiefs by 3 points in a game they didn't really play that well in. And if they can play well, and it's not going to be easy, they'll have a decent shot. And not only are they have to play well, and we're going to talk more about, we'll get really into it next week as far as, you know, maybe breaking down the matchup. But one of the obvious things, and this was frustrating to me even on Sunday with Green Bay, because they keep doing it again and again and again, and it's not working, and it's clearly not working, and it's hurting them, is lack of production on first down and insisting on running the ball for minimal yardage on first down. Just in the first quarter against Green Bay, the Bucs ran on 5 of 6 first downs, which would be one thing if it was working, but they averaged on those 5 running plays on first down 2.2 yards per carry. They had a 20% success rate, which success rate is it's defined differently on different plays, but on first and 10, success rate, I believe, is defined as 4 yards or more. So they're like, I tweeted this, they're donating away first down and in some cases second down and putting themselves in these really hard third and longs. The Bucs are the number one offense in the NFL as far as rate of passing on second and third down. That's not because there's some freewheeling offense. It's because they're always in second and third and long because of the goddamn runs on first down going for 2 yards. And it's second and 9, second and 8, maybe second and 7. And then, yeah. And they've had, and it, look, in the first quarter, it worked. Not because anything good happened on first down, but because they got bailed out on third down. And every single one of those first downs that they ran on led to a subsequent third down. I always say the best offenses aren't just good on third down. That helps. The best offenses don't have that many third downs. They're getting chunks of yardage consistently moving the ball. The Bucs seem to want to put their back against the wall. And, you know, they end up with these second and third and longs. Now, to their credit, in the first quarter, they were 5 of 6 on converting those third downs after failing on first and second down. And the average of those was 3rd and 7, but it included a 3rd and 13 and a 3rd and 9. They got the opening touchdown on a 3rd down to Mike Evans on that jump ball in the end zone. And again, they made it work. It wasn't sustainable, and they started to miss on second and third downs later in the game, and the offense didn't do as much. But they are going to have to get more creative on early downs on offense. And here's another thing. The Chiefs' defense is number three overall in the NFL on third down in a yardage of third in between 6 and 10 yards, which the Bucs spend a lot of time in when they hand the ball off on first down. So that's something you want to stay out of, and just throw the ball on first down. If it's an incomplete pass, you're not that much worse off than if you had run it anyway with the way they run on first down. Number one. Number two, you make yourself very easy to defend when you're predictable. One, with running on first down, then two, failing. And then three, now it's third and seven. And now you're easy to defend that way because you're passing and everybody knows it. And it's much easier as a defensive coordinator to call defenses when you're facing third and long. It's much easier as a pass rusher to pin your ears back when you're facing third and long. You don't have to worry about the threat of a run. You know, the element of surprise is as important as anything, and the Bucs aren't using that, and it's hurting them. So I hope, you know, all the different things, there's a million ways to break a game down. There's a million things you'll hear on Joe Bucs Fan, on ESPN, on the radio, TV, whatever, in these next, you know, whatever it is now, 10 days till the game. But the biggest one to me is, at least offensively, they've got to figure out a way to get more out of first down. And we say it all the time. You can run play action anytime. Play action has nothing to do. Nothing to do. Please, if you learn nothing else from listening to my show, learn this. Play action has nothing to do with establishing the run. It has nothing to do with how good your running game is or if you've run it already a few times. It literally is a physical reaction to seeing a quarterback just make that motion, and it freezes guys for a split second, and that's what it is. You don't need a rushing attack to be good at play action. It doesn't matter. Just call. You can, and by the way, the highest EPA per play on any type of play in all of football, combined, all teams, not just the Bucs, is play action passing. The Bucs have been big on thinking they've got to set it up, though, and you don't. And you're just, like I call it, I call them dad plays, if you've heard me say it before. DAD stands for donated down. They're dad plays on first. Let's mash it up the middle for two. You're just giving that down away. You only get three of them. So much like they did adjust their approach with the rolled up corners defensively, I hope that is something they seriously consider this week. And obviously, like I always qualify everything I say when I criticize any type of decision making. I know these guys have all forgotten more about football in the last 10 minutes than I'll ever know. I know that. But these numbers are not, I mean, this is what is happening on the field. We can all see it. And it can improve. It can. So that'll be something to keep an eye out for in the next week. So in the next week, we're going to have our, you know, be a big show getting ready for the game. We'll be closer to it by then. Obviously, you wish it was a regular year this year with all the things that come with hosting the Super Bowl. Although there's still the NFL experience is going to be fun. I got my tickets for that. It's free, but you had to go online and get them. And they're taking walk-ups too, but that'll be fun. I'm trying to limber up to run my 40, which I intend to be accountable for on this show. I'm going to do it next week, and I'll talk about whatever happens then. And my vertical, which I'm hoping to keep over 30 inches. And things like that. So that'll be fun. There'll be some stuff going on. I know it's not the same as a usual Super Bowl week. But how can we complain? Just the fact that this is happening at all is mind-blowing. And in my wildest dreams as a Tampa sports fan, I never, ever, ever would have thought all three of our teams could have won their conferences, with one having won it all and another with still a chance to win it all, in the same year. Also in a year that the Super Bowl is here with one of those teams playing. I mean, it's just... You know, on one hand, you go, oh, man, can you imagine if it was a regular year where we could all go to the games and the stadiums were full and parades and blah, blah. But on the other hand, like, I can't believe this happened at all. I really can't. And it's going to be a lot of fun. So here's what I want you guys to do if you've made it this far through the end of the show. Email me this week. My email address is bobbygameday@yahoo.com. It's BobbyGameday @yahoo.com. And on Twitter, you can get me @BobbyGameDay. Same thing. Email me or tweet at me if you want to. I want to hear from you, and I'll read some on the show next week. Besides just being happy that your favorite team is in the Super Bowl and has a chance to win the Super Bowl, tell me about what makes this special for you, whether it's getting a chance like me to see the Bucs in the Super Bowl with your son for the first time. And like I said, I was an adult by the time the Bucs were in the Super Bowl for the first time in my life. it's cool to see it from a kid's perspective, how excited my son is, whether it's getting together with friends watching the game, whether it's some memory from prior Bucks years going back to the 70s, 80s, 90s, or 2000s that's, for whatever reason, more vivid now or you're being reminded of now because of what's happening, whether it's a deceased family member who would have been happy. I don't care what it is. Just email me. Let me know just what makes this special beyond just, oh, hey, I'm a Bucks fan. They're in the Super Bowl. I would love to hear those things, and I can get into some of that on the show next week. I think it'd be a lot of fun. Again, the email address is bobbygameday@yahoo.com, B-O-B-B-Y-G-A-M-E-D-A-Y, or just follow me on Twitter, @BobbyGameDay. In the meantime, the free stretch, as it always is brought to you by our good friends at Bill Curry Ford, and they're ground zero for anything buying a car a mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry. And especially this week, there's a lot of action over there. Head over there and check them out. The lot is huge. You can social distance. Plenty of room in the showroom and outside. You can see the whole place. If you don't want to do that, I can always tell you. Website, BillCurryFord.com. C-U-R-R-I-E is how they spell it. BillCurryFord.com. Check it out. And they've got all the inventory there as well. They'll deliver the car to your house if you buy it. And in fact, they'll even deliver one to your house just to test drive if you want to see one without leaving your home. It's all taken care of. You've got the unlimited nationwide lifetime warranty. You've got 10 years roadside assistance. And you've got your first year service, oil changes, and all that completely covered no matter how you do it. BillCurryFord.com, a mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry. Or check them out at BillCurryFord.com on the internet. With all that said, you've got this weekend to get everything right, get your house all tidied up. If you were ever thinking about buying a new TV anyway, maybe this is a good weekend to go ahead and shore that up so that you're at maximum capacity for whatever's going on Sunday. If you're in the ticket market, I'll say this much about the tickets. They are out there. A lot of times with the Super Bowl, you can't even find them. You can get them online. They're out there. They're expensive. They're running about $8,000 per for the upper deck. But, you know, hey, some people, this ain't happening again. Even if the Bucks make the Super Bowl again, it's probably never going to happen again where it's in Tampa. So, hey, to each their own. It's not my scene, but I know a few people who are considering it. So, whatever it is, get your affairs in order. Get everything set this weekend. I think the Super Bowl bye week is great. We didn't have this when the Bucks were in the Super Bowl before. It all happened so fast. They were right back at it the next week. I think that extra week, even though it's a lull, everybody needs it, both the players to get healthy. And by the way, Antonio Brown, Antoine Winfield, Lavonte David, and Jordan Whitehead, the four of them, not practicing this week. That doesn't mean they're not playing, but at least they weren't practicing today. I'm recording this on Thursday. And with good reason, they've got time. Get yourself right, just like hopefully they're getting right, and get ready, because it's all going to be a whirlwind after this weekend goes by. Either way, you don't need anything else but JoeBucksFan.com, the single place anywhere, whether it's TV, radio, internet, anything, the single best place for Bucks coverage. So stay with it right here. Follow them on Twitter. Refresh the website. There's going to be tons of content. The whole thing's going to be covered top to bottom. Thanks to them for giving me this platform. As always, thanks to our good friends at Bill Curry Ford, and thanks to all of you. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are in the Super Bowl in Tampa. Don't rush it. Enjoy every day, every minute of the lead-up, because the lead-up a lot of times is just as much of it as the game is. The anticipation that, you know, we don't know what's going to happen in the game, but we remember how this makes us feel. I'll talk to you next week, maybe a couple times. Until then, have fun, be safe, and wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.